This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. I'm going to start by saying two things. When I was young, I wanted to be a lot of different things in life. One of them was a veterinarian. I never followed that passion, but I've always had kids and dogs and snakes and all kinds of animals in my presence. And I'm always grateful that Spirit has put me as their guardian here. And the second thing that I want to say is that I also believe that animals love. Animals have a soul. Animals are spiritual. And my guest today, Carlene Stang, has written a really cool book, The Spiritual Nature of Animals. Carlene is, I love the title on her book. It says, "A Country Vet Explores the Wisdom, Compassion, and Souls of Animals." So you know when that came across my desk, I was super excited and said, heck yes, I would love to have this woman on my show. So welcome to Soulful Living, Carlene.
Thank you.
I love that one of the first things I read that said, as a child, Carlene Stang, author of Spiritual Nature of Animals, wanted to be an animal doctor before she even knew what the word veterinarian is. And here you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And I was told I couldn't do it because I was a girl. Oh, yeah. All my teachers said they don't let girls be veterinarians. But, you know, just like everything, you have to listen to your internal guidance. You just have to follow your inner desire and know that that's right. You can't listen to other people's negativity.
Yeah, and you have been living your life in Durango, Colorado, where you were, I call it like the emergency vet.
I was a mobile horse doctor, and it's a lot of emergency work. Because people feed their horses first thing in the morning and last thing and when they get home after work. And so those are the times of the day that the phone would ring with, because they've noticed, oh, my horse cut itself or it's sick or whatever. So, yeah, it was a lot of hours, out of hours work.
Wow. Yeah, and In that time frame, you know, as you were doing that, you were exposed to a lot of different beliefs and a lot of different cultures to support the work that you present in the spiritual nature of animals. So let's kind of give the listeners a background on, you know, why you chose the word animas as you define in spiritual nature and some of the different cultures that inspired you to create and share this work.
Well, anima is the Latin root of the word animal. It means souls, breath, and life. And I'd heard my whole life that animals don't have souls, that non-human animals don't have souls, or that have a lower soul but not an eternal spirit. And the biblical argument was that in Genesis, only Adam received the breath of life from God, and the non-human animals did not. But animals breathe and have life. So if God didn't give them the breath of life, where do they get it? Right? Nowhere in the Bible does it say that animals do not have souls or eternal spirits. On the contrary, Ecclesiastes 3:18 and 19 state that God is testing man to show him that he too is a beast. And there is an eventuality as respects the son of mankind, an eventuality as respects the beast, and they have the same eventuality. As the one dies, so the other dies, and they all have the same breath. And man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. So it's our human ego that makes us so vain. We think we're superior spiritually, but the Bible clearly says we're the same. And so, you know, I've run into this argument, and as you mentioned in your introduction, I'd also read in the scientific literature that non-human animals are not conscious and that they don't feel love. And you know, here I am at the animal hospital. Here's one case. This lady, I'm at the animal hospital, and a woman came in with a fishing basket. And she started out by saying, I've never liked cats. And I've noticed a couple of feral cats living in the woods near my house. And she explained that it was a warm spring day, so she had the sliding glass door open to her deck, and she was on the telephone when she saw these cats come onto her deck. But before she could react, they poked their heads through the door and dropped this, she said as she opened the fishing basket. And inside was a tiny, very fuzzy, butterscotch-colored kitten. It was emaciated and very hungry. And I gave her some kitten milk replacer and said, it looks like you got yourself a cat. She said, I guess I'm going to have to
start liking him.
Yeah, I mean, and so I'm thinking, what kind of unconscious, unloving, soulless being would drop their baby at the doorstep? So these kind of questions, plus I had this Buddhist client and a Baptist client, and the Buddhist thought her dog would reincarnate, and the Baptist thought her horse was just dead meat. And I'm like, well, what is the non-physical aspect of animals? How do they function on the non-physical level? And so I spent 20 years researching everything that I could find from the religions, the science, and the spiritual teachings about animals. And, you know, science tells us that 5% of the universe is visible matter. The other 95% is invisible and unmeasurable. So what are we talking about here? Even the things we do see are just made up. Our eyes interpret the light energy reflecting off the atomic particles of the substance, and our brains create the images that we see. Science tells us there really isn't any matter. So what are we talking about? We need to talk about this. We need to understand this non-physical component of animals. And so it's been my passion. I really enjoy the information in the book. It's so fun.
Well, I have really loved delving into it, and I want to say two things. I took a class last year, and I remember the teacher saying something like, animals are intelligent, but they don't have intelligence. And I looked at her like, what the heck does that even mean? Right? You have not lived in my house. You must not have had animals, because that makes absolutely no sense to me. I know that there's some yogic wisdom in there somewhere. I just don't know what it is. And honestly, I didn't even want to find out. And secondly, you know, I've had animals in my house for years, forever, for as long as I can remember. I remember my husband and I at one point, we lost one of our pets died, and one of our animals, our dogs that lived with us, died. And he said, well, when the next one goes, we don't have to get another one. And I looked at him and I said, what? I've been alive around for 50 some years, and I have never been without an animal. To me, that's just an extension of who I am.
And
I really can't imagine a life without an animal's present. And I look at people that maybe they're not necessarily, you know, don't have any attachments to animals in their lives, but they're so not open to it. And I think, wow, you're really missing out on love in a completely different way. So your book is amazing. I think it's
super cool.
And I had so many questions about it, like love, you know, love, animals, love.
Clearly. Their offspring. They'll risk their life to save their offspring, right? They do it all the time. You know, there's the stories of the dog running into the burning building to get their puppies, or defending, you know, from a wild animal, or traffic. They're trying to get their little ducklings across the road. You know, I mean, it's so obvious that they feel love. I wonder, what are you people looking at? And I think it's so much really about our egos, which are fabulous. Our egos make us really creative, and they also make us really quite vain. And so we have to be better somehow. And, you know, they always consign animal behavior to instincts. It's not rational thinking. It's instincts. Okay, so what are instincts? Instincts are is intuitive guidance. And what is intuition? Webster says intuition is a direct experience of the truth. And so there's two ways to understand reality. There's the scientific empirical measuring thing, but we can't measure the 95% that's invisible and unmeasurable. So we have to use our instinctual knowing. And that's where people get information from meditation or precognition, or you just know something. Well, guess what? Animals function on that level all the time. Mm-hmm. They're following their instincts. We just had a huge forest fire here, and a lot of people are concerned about the animals. But the animals, the Tibetan Buddhists, the ancient Hebrews, and shamans say animals can see spirit realm better than humans can, and this is why they have extra information regarding impending phenomena such as earthquake and tsunami and volcanoes and fires. They already mm-hmm. know it's going to happen, and they leave. So when the animals leave, pay attention.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I am a shamanic practitioner, and I embrace that wholeheartedly. And even if I just look at the animals in my own home, I know when a storm is coming because one of my dogs will start getting super antsy and head to the shower. That's her safety zone. Uh-huh. Right. And sometimes I'll question, oh my God, what's going on with her? Is she okay? And then I look outside and I'm like, oh yeah, must be a storm coming.
They know long before we do what's going to happen.
They sure do. And what about the soul? Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, what about that? Let's talk a little bit more. You know, many people believe in that our energy goes on, you know, kind reincarnation or past lives, that kind of thing. How do you feel about that with animals?
Well, again, since everything is really not physical and the definition of spiritual is invisible and most of everything is invisible and all these spiritual teachings, you know, whether it be Native Americans or Tibetan Buddhists or Hebrews or whatever, they talk about a reflection world, that there is another world. That's the real world. That's behind this one. This is an illusion. This is a veil that we make up to come here and play theater for purpose of growth. Okay, so when the physical dies, when the physical ceases to function, that non-physical energy has to go somewhere, okay? So like Zen Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh, a little girl asked him one day, what are you going to be in your next life? And he said, well, I really haven't thought about it because I've been so focused on staying in the present moment. But now that you ask me, I'll be a cloud. I'll be a bird. I'll be this little flower, like this little flower right here. So, you know, you can go back to the whole and be a ray of sunlight or a breeze, or maybe the energy reincorporates. I was just listening to a near-death experience story this woman had, and she, you know, went to the spirit realm, and, you know, she said, they gave her the option, do you want to stay or do you want to go back? She said, I want to stay. And they go, well, what if you went back and did this? And she said, okay. Okay. It's like we all sort of sign up for this. And the animals sign up for it, too. And I just did an animal communication discussion with my animal communication teacher about how animals take on our stuff. And the horse, according to her, the horse, the cat, and the dog, her name is Kate Celisti, by the way, if you want to look her up, Kate Celisti, animal communicator. She said those three species have told her that they have signed up to help humans. They come here to help balance our energy. You know, the cats are fabulous healers. And the dogs, they balance us. You know, like you've ever been at the computer and you're all freaked out because you can't remember your password or whatever, you're angry. And what happens? The cat wants to lay on the keyboard. The dog's climbing on you going, hee, hee, you know. Mm-hmm. They're like saying, lady, look, chill out. You need to pet me. You need to take me for a walk. You're not balanced. You know, so they try to help us.
I love that. And I couldn't agree more. I've had many of those examples in my own life with the computer and feel that they sense it. Like I could be in another room, not even talking out loud, but I feel like they really sense how I am energetically. And they'll come in and kind of peek and, like you said, take me for a walk. Let's go in the backyard and play. Can we toss the ball around? Sometimes I'll be stressed and they'll just come and drop the ball in my lap. And I used to, when I wasn't being more present, I used to like throw the ball and say, okay, just leave me alone. And now I'm like, right. Nope, let's just go following the lead here. I'm going with you.
Right. Because you'll come back fresher and do a better job and you won't be stressing yourself out. So there, and the channel Abraham said that the primary purpose of the beasts on this planet is to balance our energy. And it's not like they're below us. It's like they signed up to do this. They signed up for all kinds of things to come and learn. And they feel honored to do it. It's not a burden for them. They'll sacrifice themselves because they know there is no death.
Right. Well, interesting story on that. I had two dogs. I had an Aussie Shepherd and a White Shepherd. And long story short, the White Shepherd died suddenly. And the Aussie Shepherd, she wouldn't eat for about a week. And I have a sliding door. And I got up one morning, it was about 5 a.m, and I put some food and water in her bowl. You know, I kept giving her fresh water, and I'm looking at the sliding door, and I literally saw the White Shepherd that passed in the sliding door as if he were standing on my desk.
And
my dog saw it. The Aussie, she saw it too. I know she saw it because her head lifted up, and I looked at her and I said, yeah, he's here, and he is telling me to tell you that you need to eat. You're the one that's here right now, not him. And she kind of looked out the window and she looked up at me and she started eating. And I tell people all the time, if that's not evidence that energy moves on and that these animals in our lives love and have like that intuitive capability, I don't know what else is.
Right.
Because that was such a strong example of, for me, that there is a soul and that there is love and that there's life after death.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the reflection was interesting to me because, you know, there's a near-death experience in my book with a woman who's in the ER, bled out, flatlined, but she saw everything that happened in detail in the ER, and she saw it as if in a mirror. So this reflection, the Tibetan Buddhist Lama Seltzer Maliani talks about the mind is a mirror. You know, and then Krishnamurti used to always say, the observer is the observed. You know, there's all this, even from science, Werner Heisenberg said, you know, separation of the observer from the phenomena being observed is no longer possible. You know, there's this reflection, and the animals do, you see the spirit in the reflection world, but they also reflect our behavior to us, and this is another way they really help us. One of my clients told me that every time her and her husband argued, their dog would have a seizure. So they had to learn to communicate calmly. And what's funny about this is that they're couples counselors. They're psychotherapists. And so
wow.
They had to, so they got to share that what they learned from the dog with their clients. You know, so they really, you know, the anxiety or the fear or whatever can often reflect how we're feeling. And it's a good mirror for us to kind of take pause and work on ourselves. The best way that we can help the animals on a spiritual level, even on a physical level, is to work on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can really relate to that, that the more you work on yourselves, the more that they will feel expansive and loved. You know, one of the things that you talk about is ego, and that the spiritual nature kind of an animal differs because they don't really have an ego.
Yeah, they don't have
the dual. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, they don't have the duality. So right, wrong, good, bad, shame, pride. Okay, so if you are angry at your dog for doing something, they might cower and act like they're ashamed, but they don't feel shame. They'll do the same thing tomorrow, right? They'll go dirty and roll in, you know, they'll eat some garbage. They'll roll in the poop and then come lay in the house. They're not concerned about it. They're not ashamed. They don't get good, bad, right, wrong. That's, you know, in the Bible it was Adam and Eve ate the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, which is a excellent description of the birth of duality. That's when humans left that paradise that the animals live in and got shamed, right? They were afraid. They were ashamed and covered themselves. And so all the religions sort of talk about, and all the spiritual teachings talk about, this paradisal time when we lived in harmony with the animals and we could communicate with them and we could travel to spirit realm. And shamans can still do that. Shamans retain the paradisal skill and transcend that duality. And a lot of the great spiritual teachers transcend this duality. But the rest of us humans, we're stuck in the pain of duality. Now, duality is very educational. And that pain is very educational, and that's what we're here to experience and to grow through. But the animals don't do that. So it's really nice. You know, like one woman said to me, I shave my hairy dog every summer because he gets too hot, but I'm afraid to do it because he hides under the table for a week after I do. And I said, you know, it's not like he's looking in the mirror thinking he's having a bad hair day. He's embarrassed because everybody's pointing at him and laughing. I said, next time you trim him, tell him he's a stud. So she told me later at work, she gave him a shave, and then she said, you look so handsome. And he strutted around the house all proud. So when our animals are sick, rather than worrying about them and going, are you okay? Are you okay? I mean, that's a contagious negative prayer, worry. Mm-hmm. And all of these emotions that we carry around with us, they don't buy into that. And if we, you know, press them with this worry or anger or shame, you know, they are affected by it. It's contagious. But they don't carry it for very long. You know, they get over it in a very short time.
So quickly.
They're like, whatever.
If we could all take that on, you know, if we as humans could just get over things as quickly as they do, the world would be a much better place.
Well said. That is so true. If we could just be happy. Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
Happy. Right?
Wag
you're
your
not
tail.
Happy. I'll go
as
over
soon
here.
As you walk
happy
in the
person.
Door, all that good stuff.
Yeah. You got anything to eat? You know?
Yeah,
they're so joyful when we're not ugly. You know, our neurotic insanity. But they're there to balance it, and so we can just be grateful to them for their education and help.
Yeah, and bringing a sense of enlightenment to us. You know, it's funny because you were talking about kind of the things that you say and tell them they're pretty and that kind of thing. And I've often said as well that you could say the meanest things in the world to a dog with the sweetest tone of voice.
Right.
And they'd be really happy.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk to them as if you're loving, kind, and just all about bringing them into your circle, even if you told them nasty things while you were doing it, they would be so happy.
A clairvoyant that I discuss in my book over and over again, I interview her repeatedly, and she says that they read our pictures.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter what you say, or what you're, you know, it matters what you're thinking. They picture it, which can be kind of confusing for them. Like she gave the example, she was lunging her horse, and she was learning how to lunge herself, and she was having the horse go one way, and then she thought, okay, now I need to stop the horse and make it go the other way. But she didn't ask him to, but the horse did.
Right.
So the horse, you know, and then she was like, okay, this is why we get in trouble. We're thinking one thing and asking another. And they get confused, like, what do you, I thought, wait, you know.
Right.
So
I remember the first time that I really had that experience myself was like, how do they know what I'm thinking? You know, or I could, like I said, I would be in another room and I would think something about my dog and they would pop in. And it's just really cool.
Right.
It's totally cool.
It is.
More that you're open to it with your animals, gosh, the cooler your own life gets.
Yeah. I've been calling my cat in my head more rather than going out and going, kitty, kitty, kitty. I just go, Blue, time to come home. Oh, I don't want to. It's getting dark. We need you to be safe. I love you so much. Please come home. And he'll be at the door. You know, it's
Isn't
great.
That amazing?
Yeah.
I remember a couple of years ago, we have robins. I don't know if it's the same robins, but they were nesting, and she had four of them, and you know, she disappeared and the robins went on their, the baby robins went on their way. And all of a sudden, one day I had this overwhelming sense of, you know, motherly loss. So I sat out in the middle of my backyard and I literally in my head said, okay, I need you guys to show yourself. I'm a mom. I'm a human mom. And I just need to know that you little babies are okay. And one by one, those four babies appeared in my yard, and my husband just had walked up at the time. And of course, I'm like super excited. I'm like, go get the camera. Oh my God, they're here. They're safe. It just blows my mind that that connection can happen. And, you know, I say if it's happening with human to human, why can't it happen human to animal?
Yeah, it does all
it's
the time.
It's very cool.
A shaman told me that when an animal presents four to you, that's your spirit guide. So on my vision quest, I had four, these little caterpillars. They were little yellow guys with orange heads. I looked everywhere. I couldn't see any more than four, but the caterpillar then became my spirit guide for my vision quest. So
wow.
You had a little robin action there. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I had four
really cool.
ravens right before my book came out. Some ravens nested. And ravens are quite mystical. And they had four babies.
Ooh, that gave me chills from head to toe, too.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, Carlene, well, we're down to the wire. It has gone by so fast. I feel like we have to do this again. So I'm going to have you come back if you're open to it.
I would love to. Anytime.
Part two here. Listeners, again, I'm having a conversation with Carlene Stang, like Mustang. You can find all of her information on the Soulful Living page here at Empower Radio. And Carlene, I love for my guests to leave the listeners with something they can take out into the day to elevate their soul, empower their lives. I don't know, maybe help them connect with the animals more. What would that be for you?
Every animal you see is a reflection of yourself. And so just enjoy all the beautiful creatures that come your way and ask yourself what the message is that they're bringing you.
Wow, I love that. That's awesome. Well, thank you again.
Thank you
so much for being here. And
my pleasure.
I look forward to doing this again.
Wonderful. Have a great day.
You too, thank you.